The title of my sermon this morning is The Case for Marriage and Gun Control. Yeah, you might as well laugh, because it does create this unfortunate sense, right? That everyone needs gun control legislation in order for people to stay safely married over time. In this month, when our themes have been perseverance and love, I had planned to preach a sermon about the value of traditional marriage, which I understand as a blessing and a sacrament, an adventure of the soul, a faithful lifetime commitment between two people, regardless of gender, to hold each other in unique love and respect and make each other the foundation of family. As the wife of a divorced man, that is not to say that every marriage must always last, but it is to say that every marriage is precious. And in fact, marriage and gun control do go together in ways that I will be so pleased to dwell on this morning. So let me just say something brief about marriage, because I can't bear to say nothing about it. Let me point out that all our religion's work for marriage equality was predicated on some assumptions that are even ironic points of agreement with the religious right. That faithful marriage between two believing and committed souls is a social cornerstone and a sacred institution. Except that for religious liberals, if marriage is a real and legitimate good, then it ought to be available to all, regardless of gender. Marriage is a sacrament because it is a sacred ritual. The ritual part is obvious. And it's sacred because of its transformative power, because it can work with a godlike power in our lives. So here is the theology piece in a nutshell. And for this, I invite you to do what I always do when I'm listening to a definition of God that may or may not align with my own. Please feel free to redefine or replace the word God in whatever ways do align with your own theology and howsoever you understand and experience the sacred. When I say, love is akin to God. Love is akin to God in that love gives us strength and hope and happiness and belief in ourselves and relief in grief and endurance in despair. We all long for it, even pray for it as fiercely as any mystic longs for God. And if and when we find it, we give ourselves to it, aware that any limits to our loving are our own. Ours to discover, or set, or transcend. Union leads to communion, and communion to union. They are self-perpetuating, and they will always take us deeper if we let them. Which is why it's troubling that though we worked so hard for marriage equality, liberal religion doesn't do a lot to support marriage once they've happened. We don't have a lot of resources to help couples maintain or deepen these relationships. We don't have a lot of resources available to help couples when they're in crisis. And we don't have a lot of resources to help couples either recommit to these relationships or exit them, if they must, with as much grace and faithfulness as possible. All of that is an important set of ideas for me. And I will now circle back to them another time, with more depth and more artistry, one hopes. But for now, I have to segue out to my second topic, and I want to do that by reminding us that marriage is a big deal and has always been a big deal going back many thousands of years. Some of you have heard me say before that 2,500 years ago in ancient Greece, for all the Greek myths about great love and great lust, marriage didn't used to be about those at all for the ancient Greeks. It was about the procreation of legitimate children, explicitly. That's literally what the marriage vows said. They were exchanged between the groom and the father of the bride. And the father said, I know, it's like a third sermon I have to circle back to. And the father said, I give this woman for the procreation of the legitimate children. So romantic. But this is still part of what marriage is so often and so blessedly about. Children are part of the purpose and gift of individuals and families and cultures and societies and civilizations coming together. Our second hymn lifted up so well the utter preciousness of children, whose sacredness is not only that they will shape the future, but the magic and insights and love they bring with their present. Their naturalness and their glee and their love and their light and their wonder, nothing matters more. And that makes what we have come to so much worse. As some of you know, our family got a puppy this week, and he is too young yet to be left alone for very long. You will hopefully be seeing him around the church when he gets a little older and his immune system is more developed, but already being present with this tiny 10-pound new life, only 8 weeks old, in our 300-year-old house, is reminding me yet again how much constant effort it takes to keep young lives safe. The endless vigilance and love and supplies and diversions and encouragement and support and nurture, everyone around us in this space here is alive in testament to others' vigilance that we did not fall down the stairs or off a cliff or eat something poisonous or step into the street in front of a car or crash our bike or fall into a pool or a lake or. And there was luck involved too, because in fact, of course, we all have fallen down, hopefully not off a cliff, or crashed our bike or fallen into a pool or gotten really, really sick, even despite vigilance. So yes, luck, because no vigilance is ever truly enough to keep those we love safe. And I look around often, especially at young people in our military, and I think of all the care that went into raising those strong individuals and keeping them alive and healthy and growing and capable, and about the incredible destruction that they are preparing for. And that is bad enough to think that our schools should be becoming such an incredibly destructive environment is unbearable. And it is unacceptable. I really mean that. Unbearable and unacceptable. Meaning, we will not bear it. And we will not accept it. Surely you have heard about the Florida legislature. Do you hear me, Florida legislature? Your days are surely numbered. Though I certainly appreciate you all giving me such compellingly vile sermon fodder, I don't know how you can look at yourselves, let alone your constituents, your people, in the eye. I don't know how you could have let gun control legislation die while the surviving youth of Stoneman Douglas High School were present in the chamber watching. But then you all seem fine with needless death after all. You have literally sold out your own state's children's lives. Did you think you could do that with impunity? And then the gall, the next day, you advance a bill that all schools must display a sign saying, "In God we trust." Is that supposed to be a joke? Because their only hope, these students, is a benevolent God, since the legislature is definitely not gonna keep them safe. It is not enough, of course, to deride people doing dreadful things somewhere, not here. And it is easy to deride the NRA and their pro-slaughter agenda. It's not enough for me, though, and it's not enough for us. What matters now isn't ultimately our outrage. Not even the clarity of corruption and soullessness in so many of our nation's legislators. It is what we are going to do about that, starting now and until we have made the changes we need. The day before the Stoneman Douglas High School shooting, I was meeting with clergy and activist colleagues about a proposal I wanted to make. It is based on a worship service that I heard about from the church that hosts the Revolutionary Love Conference a bunch of us are going to in April. A couple of years ago, they did a swords to plowshares service to affirm their support for gun control. They brought a real disabled gun into their worship space on Sunday morning and dedicated it and gave it to a blacksmith to turn into a gardening tool. I thought that was a powerful, real-world faith statement. It is based on a line that comes up in the Hebrew Bible multiple times, most notably in Isaiah chapter 2, verse 4, "And he shall judge among the nations and shall rebuke many people, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift sword against nation. Neighbor shall not, nor shall they learn war anymore." This was, of course, from a time when the idea of citizens of a nation using weapons of war against each other seemed the most dreadful thing. And I thought about needing to bring that ritual here, tough as it is. I anticipate that it will be hard for many of us to have a gun in this meeting house, our worship space, our sanctuary. It will be hard for me. And I would never do such a thing lightly. But this isn't the time for delicacy and taste. This is a time for real responses to real threats that are strong and serious and hard. And even that, I thought, isn't enough. It is too predictable that a Unitarian Universalist church is coming down on the side of gun control. And while the spectacle might garner us an article, maybe even above the fold in the Providence Journal, maybe even some local television coverage, it wouldn't surprise anyone, and it wouldn't change anything. In the end, it would be more about us and raising our profile than making a difference on the issue. We needed something that is bigger, and that's when I realized that I needed to ask my colleagues across our city, maybe even across our state, to join me. I wanted to see this ritual roll like a wave, a mighty wave of worship, dedicating guns again and again across a whole weekend, on Friday night and Saturday morning, on Sunday mornings, in synagogues and mosques, and then in Christian and non-denominational and Unitarian Universalist churches, all of us, so many faiths and cultures saying no more, and not just to support gun control in general, but in specific three bills that are coming up in the Rhode Island legislature this year: a semi-automatic weapons ban, a no guns in schools law that prohibits anyone except a trained law officer from bringing guns into our schools, and this extreme risk protection order that seemed like it would be such heavy lifting when we had our meeting. I reached out to my colleague and friend, the senior rabbi Howard Vos Altman over at Temple Beth El, and he said yes, right away. And he offered to work with me on this. And I reached out to our own Reverend Gene Dishlevsky to see if he thought this could work, and he said yes and offered to convene a meeting. That same meeting happened that day before the Parkland school shooting. A bunch of clergy from different faiths came to that meeting and agreed to do this. Howard and myself and Reverend Kurt Walker, who is a local UCC minister, a Congregationalist minister, are leading the interfaith effort. And representatives from Moms Demand Action and the Rhode Island Coalition Against Gun Violence came and agreed to work with us on this. And some of them are here in the congregation this morning. Would you please stand up so we can welcome you specifically, folks out there from Channing? Thank you for being here. We found a weekend we could all commit to, and I honestly feared we wouldn't. It was a big deal, especially because it's a weekend that is poignant and hard and right, both for the legislative calendar and for its meaning. It's Mother's Day. So this is happening. Plans are afoot for this larger rollout and for our own service that morning. I look forward to creating, all of us, the most inclusive and powerful and real service we can craft together, adults and youth, some of us new to this fight, some of us who helped create the quilt that we display every year here at the Sandy Hook Vigil, the quilt that is made from the clothing of children killed by gun violence. The Swords to Plowshares clergy group is working to find an artist or a group of artists and artisans to work with. We will buy handguns or semi-automatic weapons, get them disabled, bring them into our houses of worship, dedicate them, and give them to be made into gardening tools or art. We will get the guns from buyback programs. There is more than one artist working locally who is converting guns to art. Some of them make guns into metal art. Some of them make molds of the guns they receive, and then they cast the molds with glass. A glass gun to remind us of the fragility of life. Or they cast the molds with melted crayon, a crayon gun to remind us of the terrible conjunctions of children and guns. The money they make from their cast guns they use to buy more guns from the police buyback program, taking more and more guns off the streets and out of the weapons pipeline. On that Sunday of Mother's Day weekend, we will gather in our congregations to write letters and postcards to our legislators, all of us, all ages, children and youth and adults and families and singles of all colors and cultures and faiths, telling them they must pass these pieces of legislation here in Rhode Island. My hope is that we will gather the Monday after to deliver in person our letters and cards, the photographs of ourselves and our families and our classes from school and from Sunday school to our legislators, each to our representatives at the State House. If you are busy that day, if you are working that day, can you take it off? They will see that we are many. They will see our commitment and that our requirements are sure. And some of them will be so glad we are there to be their allies, and some of them will dread us as opponents, which they do not need to do, because after all, we come in peace to save our lives and maybe theirs as well. We will not be a country, a state, a city that provisions itself for mass murder, that preys upon our own people, least of all our children, with semi-automatic weapons to empower the disgruntled, the vengeful, the mentally ill, or anyone, anyone at all. We will not be the puppets or the pathway for the gun lobby and gun manufacturers and ammunition manufacturers rubbing their bloody hands in anticipation of the profits from armed educators and armed universities and colleges and armed student bodies and firearm classes in gym and bullets in the checkout aisle of the grocery store, candy-colored bullets to go with the candy-colored guns they are already making, and shootouts over road rage and parking spaces and who is next in a waiting line. We are not going there. We reject everything about that agenda of slaughter and bloodshed, and most despicable of all, the profit. the profiteering of the gun makers and ammunition makers who think they can make even more of their carnage-driven earnings with the ever more outrageous and arrogant and ignorant pronouncements of their lobbyists, and God help them, with the blood of children. Our cities and neighborhoods and states and congregations are communities of people. And we are people for whom life and love and justice and peace and hope for all are paramount. We insist on gun-free spaces for us to educate our children, to worship in our faith, to gather for music and dancing and celebration and safety. Safety that comes not with the weaponizing of our society, but with the removal of semi-automatic weapons from our communities, the removal of guns from schools, the removal of guns from the hands of those who are not fit to bear them. This is not complicated, and it is not negotiable. This is it. We are committed. We will not stop. Perseverance and love are exactly the right themes for now. We will persevere for love. The guns are what will stop. The guns will stop, and the people, and the youth, and the children will live. Amen.